fighting for America.
Mr. President, if you don't want to give terrorists a recruitment tool, instead of closing Guantanamo Bay, frankly, sir, you ought to close your mouth. They called us crusaders, and you've just confirmed it.
Fighting for Idaho.
The situation with the underpass that you're talking about, it's a microcosm of a larger issue, and because it's such a high profile, I think people focus on it a little more than the overall situation warrants.
Fighting for you.
Remember those creepy king ads they did?
The king!
The king.
They were so creepy, though.
They were so creepy.
I thought they were good after a while, though. Here comes the king. He's going to get you.
Boise's Mr. Right, Kevin Miller in the Morning, winner of the 2014 Marconi Radio Award on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Good morning, K. Miller in the Morning. If you're working second or third shift, I guess third shift, time for you to go to sleep. Stay with us. We promise to let you go gently into the night, if you will. A couple big stories in media that we'll be covering today. Obviously, Brian Williams, as you just heard, 6 months without pay from NBC News. John Stewart leaving. So you have one guy who fakes the news, Brian Williams, and one guy who embellishes the news or does fake news, John Stewart leaving. With us now to figure everything out, our friend Tim Graham from the Media Research Center. Tim, good morning.
Good morning.
You know, we take a look at this. Any surprise that Brian Williams got a suspension without pay as opposed to being fired?
Well, it may turn out to there not to being much difference to that. You know, this, what I suspect might happen is that, you know, this internal review, I think they found enough that they figured we can't just let this go. And then they're, you know, the more they look into it, they're going to realize this is probably not a good idea. They want to see if it'll blow over. They wanted to, but they wanted to nip their credibility in the bud by putting him aside now. So, I mean, I think this is just their way of kicking the can and let's see what continues to come out.
You know, people are crediting social media for this, but in reality, social media has been doing what the Media Research Center and other groups under your umbrella have been doing for years as far as holding the media accountable for stretching or embellishing the truth.
Well, and what happens a lot in these things is, yes, it's social media and it's new media that challenges old media to do its job. And so a lot of the things we were doing, some of it, we are able at the Media Research Center to dig up old videos. So we have been able to do some original work saying, look at this crazy thing he said in 03. This is this crazy thing and it said in 06. You know, we have been able to do some original digging into our archives, but a lot of what we're doing is just reporting other reporting on Williams and trying to make everybody realize that this, yeah, this is a serious thing. I mean, the early spin was, oh, conservative glee, and I would tweet at reporters and say, one, there's no glee, but why is this a conservative thing? You know, why doesn't anybody care that this guy tells wacky, wild tales of his life when he's the anchor man for the most popular newscast in America? I don't see how, you know, I kind of shame journalists like, you know, this, you ought to care about this. This shouldn't be a right-wing thing.
It was a challenge, though, I think, for the media to cover one of their own, wasn't it?
Well, it probably always is. I mean, part of it is, there has to be a certain amount of critical mass because they're all going to say, ooh, this is the most popular newsman in America. We don't want to push too hard. And that was the initial response. It got a really sort of tepid start. And then, you know, the more people looked into it, they said, you know, somebody made the decision, no, this is real. It should be, there should be some investigation. So, you know, the first day of the story, after the story broke, the Washington Post had it on the front page, but the New York Times had it like B10, you know, buried on B10. By Friday, it was on the front page of USA Today and New York Times, and then suddenly ABC and CBS decided it was real news because the New York Times decided it was. So, I mean, that was a major part of making all this happen. Is, you know, the new media can't make it happen on its own. The new media has to shame the old media into covering it.
And we've seen that. So what do you expect the fallout will be? You said they're going to try and see if Williams can come back, but how can he, especially now when you have so many people, as you've talked about, Tim, who are looking into some of his past reporting?
Well, I I would bet on him not coming back, at least not at NBC at that particular place. I mean, he might find another spot. You know, Dan Rather found another spot. It was a very obscure spot. You know, he might find another spot from which to report. But, you know, I think in this case, they're going to, find more. The other thing they're going to be looking at is, if we let Lester Holt anchor this thing and the ratings are okay, we know we can stay with him. You know, that's the other hedge they're having here. You know, I don't know how you think in 6 months Brian Williams is going to be number one again after this kind of incident. And, you know, I mean, I just think the things we were finding, it was just, I'm actually a little upset that we didn't make more of an issue out of this sooner. I mean, him saying on the Letterman show that his helicopter was hit by an RPG should have been a red flag for us back in 2013. I don't know. I must have slept through that one. But, you know, I think that, again, somebody who's labeled as trustworthy gets away with more until you really start pulling the thread.
And certainly we're seeing that with Brian Williams. Does this send a cautionary tale out to any of the other folks? And, you know, you read the published reports, and we look at the other reporting, and people have said that, you know, this was going on inside NBC for quite some time. They knew they had a problem with him because he kept pumping up his resume.
Yeah, I mean, I think the great thing about this, I think, for a more accountable media is it'll say to these network stars, when you get to a certain level, you don't get to have this division and say, well, as long as you don't lie about your own personal history, you know, on the newscast, it's okay. Go ahead and lie in, you know, speeches and Letterman appearances. Go ahead and lie when you speak at a commencement. Go ahead and lie in particular, the one I was working on this morning, in a book that Douglas Brinkley wrote about Katrina. I mean, this is supposedly a historian's book, and Williams is telling these wild stories about my Ritz-Carlton was overrun by gangs, which the manager of the Ritz-Carlton was like, no, didn't happen. So, I mean, that's, you know, I thought the New Orleans tapes were the ones that really made him look bad. I mean, and because I was just laughing trying to read this stuff, and he said this on NBC's air, like, you know, well, I was carrying around a case of Vienna sausage in case I was the victim of a smash-and-grab carjacking. And you're like, what kind of goofy statement is that?
Well, he's kind of, look, he's kind of a weird guy to begin with. There was I don't know if you remember this, back in Birmingham, they did the 40th anniversary or whatever of the 16th Street Baptist Church bombing. Mm-hmm. And I was working Birmingham at the time, and I was on at night. Williams is going, the city is under siege. Security is at an all-time high. No, it wasn't. But it didn't play into his narrative. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, there was no need to even be vigilant. People have moved past. Are there racial problems? Yes, but, you know, that's what the narrative he wanted to portray. And getting back to Katrina, you know, I remember Brian Williams supposedly that he was stuck in the Superdome, and now we find out he was at the Ritz-Carlton. You remember those reports? We're stuck in the Superdome. We can't go anywhere.
Well, this is, I mean, look, we've got interns now watching the Katrina footage we have, because he was just prone to wild overstatement. NBC News as an entity latched on to Mayor Ray Nagin's estimate that there were 10,000 dead. They reported that figure. Now, obviously, what we've seen from history is it's 1,830-something. So, you know, they were only off by 80%. But, I mean, that's the kind of thing that there was so much of this in Katrina, where even a month after the New Orleans paper, there was so much myth-making going on.
And we see it now playing out. Tim Graham with us from the Media Research Center. Kevin Miller in the morning. You're listening to 580KIDO. So what do you make of John Stewart leaving?
Well, that's a bit of a surprise because, I mean, he's 52. He's not exactly 65.
Right.
I would have thought, for example, that with a Republican presidential primary cycle coming, he would have been rubbing his hands together. I'm a little surprised. I don't know whether his, you know, his stint directing a movie nobody watched was that exciting, but
well, when we take a look at what Stewart has done, you have the progressives and the liberals, the millennials saying this is our go-to source of information. Your take on his 17 years at The Daily Show?
Well, I think that there is a... he's always been overpraised. He's always been the liberal darling. He's never been what you'd call a news interviewer because, you know, you look at him interviewing somebody like John Kerry or Barack Obama or even Brian Williams. I mean, he was a very obsequious interviewer. So I think a lot of his satire was not only, you know, factually inaccurate. And, of course, the game you can always play is, hey, it's satire. It doesn't have to be accurate. And I think the most important thing, again, from a journalist's perspective, it was them doing these sorts of fake news interview segments where they would interview people for like 3 hours, like conservatives or especially Christian conservatives, and then interview these guys for 3 hours, pull 15 seconds of it out, you know, and say that was the real thing. And the people would come out and say, I said the very opposite thing of that 80 times. They were waiting for me to say it the way they wanted. And then they said, thank you very much, and misled everybody about what I was trying to say. I mean, it's these guys, you know, they taught conservatives not to trust them. You know, every conservative now says don't do an interview with these guys if it's going on tape because it's going to get completely mangled. So, I mean, I, you know, if it was up to me, I mean, it would be nice to do more of this. And I guess the hard part is, again, it is a comedy show, so it's harder to get everybody upset about it. But I, you know, he in, on some nights was just like Brian Williams, maybe worse.
What would have happened if this had been Sean Hannity or Glenn Beck that pulled the Brian Williams?
Well, I mean, I think that, you know, this sort of concern about Glenn Beck used to tell these stories about the FEMA trailers. I mean, that I think ultimately built up to a point where the Fox News people felt they'd had enough. I mean, it took time. Obviously, I think that what you're asking, and I think you're correct, and that is if a Fox anchor made stuff up like Williams did, it would have caught on much faster because I think that there's no reluctance at CBS or ABC or NBC to a Fox News scandal. You know, I don't think they would say, gee, these are our friends. We should be really careful.
Right, and again, that shows you the double standards that we have. Tim, can you hang on for a minute?
Getting more done before sunrise than anyone. Kevin Miller in the morning on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Kevin Miller in the morning, 580 KIDO. Phone numbers 580-5436. Tim Graham joining us from the Media Research Center, and we've had the huge giant sucking sound with the Brian Williams story. Other issues, specifically MSNBC's treatment of Chris Kyle. You all at MRC.org have a story where over 60 military leaders demand that NBC apologize for the Chris Kyle comments by one of their reporters. For folks that really don't know the background, Tim, can you give us the details of the story?
Well, NBC News has hired this reporter named Ayman Moyaldeen from Al Jazeera, who worked at CNN also. And he has repeatedly gotten in these sorts of issues where he seems to want to take the Saddam Hussein side of things. This was particularly egregious, though, on Morning Joe, where he basically suggested that Chris Kyle was a racist who went on killing sprees. Well, that's not what snipers do. Snipers don't get up and shoot 26 people at once. You know, I mean, it was just such a, you know, an offensive description of, you know, of the American military. You know, it's an indictment not just of Kyle, but of, you know, the people all around him in the Army. And this is where, you know, it's fine if you want to go to the Middle East and find people who can speak Arabic, you know, and get you a story. But, you know, you're going to have a problem if you're going to hire people who speak Arabic and think that the Al Jazeera is just the best news source in America. That's the kind of commentary you're going to get. You're going to get this anti-American crap. And it's offensive. And it's nice that we're able to sort of channel the beliefs of people that this kind of thing is exactly what people don't like about MSNBC, and it's exactly why they're having ratings problems.
Well, and again, when I heard the comments and we played those, who makes these decisions to have these goofs on?
Yeah, well, it starts with Joe Scarborough in this particular case. Not that Joe Scarborough, you know, tells his MSNBC bosses what to do. As long as his paycheck comes in, he'll do whatever MSNBC tells him.
Right.
You know, I don't think the guy has an ethical bone in his body. You know, he's just, hey, whatever you want, boss. So, I mean, it is a... It was really a depressing spectacle. And I think what makes me upset is there's this whole idea, it's the same thing that upsets me about public broadcasting, is these people get reputations. These are the cool-minded people. They don't say anything rash. They're the voice of civility because they don't yell. You don't have to yell to say ridiculous things. Now, Scarborough was pushing back on this, you know, killing sprees. I mean, I guess I should admit that. But, I mean, this is the kind of thing that are foisted on the American people, you know, when you hire reporters from Al Jazeera. I mean, you can't put these kind of people on.
Well, I'll tell you, Al Jazeera sends me an email every day trying to get their reporters on here, and we won't have it. I mean, it's just not in our mission statement.
Well, and I think the whole thing about this is, you know, there are people now working in Al Jazeera America who were reasonable journalists when they were at NBC or CBS or ABC, but they took the paycheck. The fact of the matter is, though, again, is, yeah, you can't be a liberal and be upset that, you know, make wacky claims like, well, Fox is being run by a foreign power because Rupert Murdoch was born in Australia or something, and then turn around and say, but I'm all fine with a media outlet run by the Emir of Qatar. You know, I mean, it's really sad that it's on this many cable outlets in America because they bought their way in through Current TV. Thank you, Al Gore.
Well, the other thing, though, that gets me is just the co-opting of the media by the Obama administration. You've got Axelrod pushing his book. Of course, he's paid by NBC News. As a political advisor, you have many of the former Obama people that are, you know, tied to NBC.
Yeah, I think that it's, you know, one might say it's somewhat common to bring on people from old administrations to be your experts from time to time because they've been there. They've been in the White House. They've made these decisions. They've got their insights. But, yeah, now they seem to bring them in while the president they served is still there. And then they ask questions. This CBS interview with David Axelrod yesterday was just atrocious. And, you know, well, the president seems to have a spring in his step. What do you think about that? You know, I mean, that is not a question. That is a, you know, that's the putting the little wiffle ball on a tee and saying swing.
Well, my favorite thing is that apparently now, and they've got the documentation where the president lied about his views on same-sex marriage. And
exactly.
And that's not a big story. I mean,
well, again, this is the kind of thing that'll become a big story in the new media. And in part because, yeah, this is the kind of thing that these, you know, CBS and NBC, I mean, you know, at least NBC asked Axelrod about the controversy when he said, well, the president got mad that Mitt Romney brought race up in his, you know, when he was calling to congratulate the president on winning on election night. And the Romney staffers are like, that didn't happen. Well, NBC at least pushed Axelrod to respond to that. CBS didn't even go that far. Just really sad that they have somebody, you know, it's one thing to say, oh, here comes a former Obama person pushing a book. Let's have him on. Okay. But why don't you just ask him some real questions and not, gee, the president seems happy, don't you think? You know, that's not a question. Or this is the other trend that upsets me, and this happened on NBC, too, where they'll say, you wrote this in the book. Do you really believe that? Well, yeah. Why do you think you put it in the book? That's just a dumb question. It's not really even a question.
That and the idea of you have to look at these stories with critical thinking, and a lot of folks don't, Tim.
Well, and again, this is the important thing. You know, I'm not saying that if I had the chance to sit there at the table at CBS and ask David Axelrod a question, it wouldn't be, hey, you jerk, you know, shouldn't Obama be impeached? You know, that's not the question I would ask. You know, but what, again, it's what you think is the newsworthy question. And, yeah, you, here's the hard part. You might have to actually read the book to be able to ask about the book. Well, they don't do that. They work in television. I mean, that's one excuse they'd have for not pulling out this gay marriage piece. Well, we didn't, you know, the Axelrod's publicist didn't tell us that was in there. You know, that's the way they act. It's like, but, you know, again, there are certainly things that you could ask him about. And I would have started with, yes, the Romney camp says, you got this wrong. Your book is not reliable. That's, I think, where that interview should have started.
Tim Graham, MRC.org. Thanks again, brother.
Okay, you betcha.
Kevin Miller in the morning. You're listening to 580 KIDO.
Ramsey, weekdays at noon. Now back to Kevin Miller on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Men, Kevin Miller in the morning, 580 KIDO. Dave Burnett with us, the Manly Man segment, and here we are. It's Thursday already. Where's the time gone?
I don't know.
You don't know?
No, I don't know.
So did you invest in a lottery ticket or what?
Yeah. I had to get a coat hanger, too.
A coat hanger?
Sure, to get my letter of resignation out from under Kevin Godwin's door this morning.
Why is that?
Because I filed my letter of resignation. I was so sure I was going to win $500 million yesterday.
And?
Nope. Nobody from Idaho.
Hmm.
Somebody from Puerto Rico. Is that part of the United States?
Allegedly.
Huh. Puerto Rico, North Carolina, and Texas. Is Texas part of the United States?
Still.
Okay. Yeah, those three winning tickets, none for me. Here I am working.
Man.
What time do you want me to wash your car?
No, I'm with you. I lost $500 million as well.
I like that attitude.
Yeah.
I lost $500 million.
You can tell your kids, your grandkids, you know, hey, I lost $500 million.
Yeah.
And
sounds like an old Jimmy Buffett song.
Exactly. I had a couple of ways. I went in with the pool here. Did you go in with the pool here?
You know, I was guilted and shamed into doing that because I thought, man, if everybody quits and I'm the last one left, think of all the work I'll have to do. I'm putting my money in too.
Right. Mm-hmm. So you joined the crew here.
Yeah.
Then Mrs. Miller bought one. She goes, because, you know, you don't gamble, so I have to do the gambling for us.
And you're going, oops, honey, I'm gambling at work.
I said, no, I said, thank you for that. And then I had a buddy of mine in Alabama who, God bless him, has always thrown me in with his lottery stuff since I never buy the tickets.
Nice.
So I had three chances out of a gazillion, and here I am with you.
Yeah, $500 million.
Yeah, and that's the weirdest thing. I mean, it does start playing tricks with your mind because I have to even say that I go, you know, I'm feeling kind of lucky, and I'm going to buy a radio station. And you see, I didn't know that if you were there, and you know what my dream is, of course, is to buy this radio mm-hmm. station and then have you work here and everybody else that didn't play the lottery. They all work for me, and we all dress up as superheroes all day.
Well, some of us all work for you anyway.
But you know what I'm saying. I mean, and we'd have outfits and such. Mm-hmm. Now, nobody has uniforms anymore. I think media people, radio people should have uniforms. Like Channel 7 should have like a big 7, like a big red blazer with a 7 on it.
Sure. Remember 17. Those days on TV when everybody mm-hmm. wore, they all wore the blazers.
Yeah, we had a guy here once that I said, he was in sales, and I said, man, you need to bring back the K-Team. The K-Team? Well, whether you bring it back or not, just call it the K-Team and have everybody wear light blue sweaters with KIDO on it. Or not sweaters, but blazers.
I was going to say sweaters.
And then people were very upset.
They were?
Yeah, a lot of the people at the time that worked here, they didn't like that. They go, I do that, I'm going to take him out in the parking lot and beat him up. And I go, whoa!
Man.
I go, that sets you apart, and then you don't have to buy a jacket. You get one provided by the company.
I can't remember where it was at now, but there was a thing done by a TV station that the guy wore the same jacket every night for a year, and nobody ever said anything. Be it his female co-host, if she wore the same thing 2 weeks, you know, one day, 1 week, and the same thing the next week, they'd get emails about it. And they showed this clip of 300 and, you know, whatever it was, 300 different pictures of him wearing the exact same jacket every day, and nobody ever said a word. He just changed his shirt and tie. and wear the same blue blazer every day.
Well, you notice that with a lot of the folks at TV, they do wear like a dark blazer every day. Mm-hmm. Now, not your Mark Johnsons, but some of your other folks. And then you have people that don't wear, like men, that don't wear blazers at all. And look, if you're a woman, and I wouldn't know anything about that, but if you're a woman, you get to wear a lot more a variety of things than men. I mean, you can get away with a blazer. You can get away with this. You can get away with a pantsuit. Let's bring back the pantsuit.
But I think some do still wear it. But
the polyester pants.
Yeah. Well, no, that's Hillary Clinton. She's got that. But, yeah, just in case you don't know, there are no-nos for TV. You do not wear green. You do not wear black. And you don't wear stripes.
You don't wear black.
No.
Why?
You do not wear black on a TV set. That's a no. If you see a reporter wearing black, that's not good.
Man.
It's just, it's technically difficult.
See, folks, for your TV careers, you've got some good advice.
We just got you set now, yeah. You wear something striped and the engineer will be all over you.
How about orange?
That works.
Like bright Bronco orange.
Yeah, that would work unless you're Mike Sanford.
So, everybody's buzzing about this. You broke the story before anybody else on our sports station, 630 The Fan.
Yeah.
Me personally, I don't think you're very objective about that crew over there in the blue.
What am I not objective about?
You love them. Mm-hmm. I come up with legitimate questions. You call me a hater instead of a contrarian, which is what everybody knows that I am, because I go counter to the culture.
What is to hate about this story?
I didn't say there was anything to hate about it. I'm not getting defensive either.
Okay.
So, Mark Sanford gets a gig at Notre Dame.
Mm-hmm. Allegedly. Hasn't been announced yet.
Yeah. They're not denying it.
No. No.
Yeah, that's another thing. I mean, are we dealing with Obama and a call for the War Powers Act? It's a coach going for another job. It hasn't been confirmed yet. Okay. Well, people that get paid a lot of money to troll the websites that have incredible connections. I mean, you're talking about a guy, you know, like our own Fox News, Bruce Feldman, okay?
Yep.
This guy has written two or three bestsellers, I think three. He does this for a living. So he's not going to go, hey, I saw it on Scrappy.com. That's how these guys make their money.
And Bruce Feldman probably has friends inside Notre Dame circle and knows.
And when you're a guy like Bruce Feldman, and let's say you're somebody at Notre Dame or Boise State, you feed him something off the record because then he owes you.
Yep.
So
that's the way the news for inside information. That's the way the news business works.
Right. So here's the skinny. So you've got Mark Sanford, 33, has paid his dues, a legacy guy. His father's a successful coach at Indiana State. He gets an offer to go to Notre Dame. Now, do you take it? I mean, he's had a great run, only a year here at his alma mater with his buddies. One of the best, if not the best place to raise a family. You talk about a fan base that will never turn on you. It's these guys here, led by Dave Burnett. Any regrets about leaving? I'm just going to run with that. You can say he's not. You'll take the official side. I'll be the unofficial side and say, why wouldn't he go?
I had a conversation with one of the biggest BSU homers in the world here in the building yesterday when I had this news. He goes, what's that? I said, it looks like he's leaving. And this homer actually said to me.
Hold on, you're calling somebody a homer?
Yeah.
Wow.
This homer actually said to me, why would he leave Boise State for Notre Dame? And I looked at him straight-faced and went, you are joking, right?
Now, I got to tell you, that's a true blue BSU fan.
I said, you've got to be joking, right? I held up my hands and went, Boise State offensive coordinator, nice job. I'd take it if they offered it to me. Notre Dame offensive coordinator, gee, which one would you take?
Right.
Not even counting money. You talk about, you're in your 30s. You're the offensive coordinator, a team with the ninth-ranked offense in America. And actually, I'm kind of excited to see what he'd bring to Notre Dame. A little bit more excitement in their offense.
Here's the skinny on that, and I'm sure he's already talked about it, but you know how this is. When people recruit you, oh, you're going to do this, you're going to do that. Trust us, you're going to be able to do what you did at your old job here. And I'm trying to remember, there was a couple people that, they were innovative at their job. They were the masters of the universe, and then they went to another place that was a little bit more restrictive, and they didn't have the same freedom to do what they were promised. I mean, sometimes there's the bait and switch.
Yeah. Oh, there is. I mean, and but there may be a real possibility. Brian Kelly said to him, you know, we want you to bring the excitement, the diversity that the offense at Boise State has. We want you to bring that here. Now, here's the confines you have to work within. Here's what I'd like to see. As the head coach, you'll say that, and then give him the realm, you know, the range to do that under him.
Wait a minute. I got an example for you.
Okay.
And I just want to say that. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I had to.
But you did.
Okay.
I'll just finish this very quickly. Or you might get under a head coach that says, yeah, you can do what you want. And then they come in and say, yeah, no, you're doing what I want. But
here's the example I was going to give you. I had a buddy of mine, Larry Blakeney, head coach at Troy University. Great guy. He was the guy that got run from Auburn because he got caught on tape with the players when they were paying him saying, keep it cool, cuz, big 60 minutes thing. So he had this whiz-bang assistant. You remember back when the spread was the big thing? Like Urban, it was like a year or two after Urban Meyer brought it to Florida. Mm-hmm. So Troy had like a spread, but in addition to that, I think it was kind of like a hurry-up spread kind of thing. It was, it led the FBS, I guess, in points and stuff, but top 5 points, okay? Innovative offense. So he gets the offensive coordinator, Troy, gets a big-money job at Auburn. Tommy Tuberville, blah, blah, blah. I believe it was Tuberville. I think it was. In fact, I think that's what got Tuberville. So he comes in, and in Auburn, it was like 3 yards and a cloud of dust. So he tries to put in his system, and the guy wrote a best-selling book about the spread and everything else, and there was resistance from the head coach, which was Tommy Tuberville, now at Cincinnati. The guy never was allowed to succeed. The system failed. He got fired after 3 games because the offense wasn't producing like it was supposed to, but he wasn't given the freedom to do that. How many times have you been offered jobs and you get to the job and you're going to do this, you're going to do that, and then all of a sudden, just make do with what you have, bunkie.
Yeah.
That's the danger of leaving a gig like Boise State, I would think.
Yeah. I mean, that's always a possibility. And it's one other thing that was funny yesterday, because immediately the rumors started swirling, who's going to take the job? And immediately somebody came up to me in the building and goes, we've heard that Kellen Moore is coming back and going to take the job. And interestingly enough, and right in the middle of all of this, which, by the way, Kellen Moore and Brian Hart are very close friends. Yesterday, I was communicating with Kellen about something else that's going on. So I said to him, and I will read the text to you, and I've got permission to do this from him. I said, just so you know, the rumors are flying about the BSU OC position and you. His answer to me was, on the text, haha, I'd do it if they'd give me 3 months off like I have right now. So, I don't know. What does that say? He would do it if you give him the 3 months off like he has right now.
Well, he might be getting 3 months off permanently.
Yeah, he's a free agent. He may be permanent. But I found that very interesting.
But a good gig if he can keep that rolling.
Sure. Oh, yeah. Good money in it. Taylor Tharp, by the way, is in the wings. He's got another position, a former Boise State quarterback. He was with football operations or something, so he's right there.
Yeah. I don't know if they'd make him the OC, though.
No.
Is it going to be like the tight ends coach or something like that?
They might make him the quarterback coach.
Hmm.
So, you know, they got options, and Ryan Dinwiddie's out there. He's coaching the Canadian League right now. You know, so there's a number of possibilities out there.
Right. You don't know if he's part of the Harsin crew, though. Could be, could not
Dinwiddie,
be.
Yeah, well, he was with, he was more with Hawkins.
Mm.
But, you know, they all know each other, bottom line. They all know each other. So we'll see what happens. I got to do this, though. You ready? Traffic now. As you're coming out of Canyon County into Ada County, we're in pretty good shape out there. This
Sean Hannity, weekdays at 3. Now, back to Kevin Miller on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
558, Kevin Miller in the morning, 580 KIDO. Now we all feel like a bunch of dopes, don't we? Maybe a bunch of dunderheads. We blew that big money on the lottery. Maybe it was a buck. Maybe it was 10 bucks. Maybe it was 5 bucks. Maybe it was whatever. And all our hopes and dreams are dashed. See, folks, that's the lesson of embracing instant gratification, right? That's the lesson of thinking, well, all I have to do is get lucky once, and I'll never have to work again. Does it really ever work that way? Hey, coming up, we're going to take a look at two contentious issues. Is it the internet? Is it the textbooks? Why can't the schools do both as far as funding for the kids? And does it look good for gaming machines in the horse racing tracks? We'll discuss that and more next. First, time for... All right, so you have this judge saying Idaho's broadband contract is void. The voided contract, which has been happening for a while, you're talking about $60 million that's up in the air. The state hasn't paid the bill since September, and you got the vendor saying we're going to shut it off February 22nd. Can schools live without the internet? We'll discuss next.